Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Roll the Roast. Ben Welch, how you doing, mate?
I feel sick.
Is that because you've woken up and realised you're an horrible, stinking gooner?
but the main reason is I can't face Sunday. It has become the fixture that I least look forward to. Back when we were dominant, it was the fixture that I couldn't wait for. Now it's the one that I can't bear to watch.
I never get this, right? Most Arsenal fans I know and see, they are all, Tottenham are a shit little club. We're going to put you back where you belong and always. And you were always playing that cautious card. Always. Like, you've seen your lot go a season invincible. You've seen your team win the double. I've seen my team win 2 league cups in my lifetime and have a good run in the Champions League. And that's it.
This is true, but White Hart Lane, North London derby, as much as it pains me to say, absolutely it is rocking. And I always feel like if Spurs are going through a bit of an indifferent period, they often see this game as the sort of this can turn our season. This can be the launch pad. This can turn things around, and it gets the fans back on side. All the Spurs players are like massively up for it. Kane's always bang up for it because it's like proving a point after.
Well, he can break him. Jimmy Greaves' record as well.
Exactly. So, oh god, that's definitely going to happen. That just makes it even
one
worse.
Goal to match it, 2 goals to break it. Obviously, yeah. You know, simple maths that, but you know,
I mean, the most sure bet possible on for the weekend is that Harry Kane will score a penalty. That some fucking stupid like challenge we're doing the box. Like, the worst thing is, I always think, get through the first 20 minutes and we might be all right, and just survive the last 5 minutes of the first half, so that if like we're level, I want to go in at half-time level, but I don't want the game to be out of sight, or like that we're completely on the back foot and totally rattled in the first 20 minutes, which can be the case. And I always think a lot of those games, and I think White Hart Lane will be rocking, but that really sets the tempo. Like if Spurs come out and like put in a few tackles or like have a few chances, that gets the crowd up, and then that really kind of is what is fueling the momentum. If the first 5-10 minutes are a bit sedate and nothing really happens in the game, that's always really good for us when we're at White Hart Lane, because that's without the crowd pushing the team forward. I always kind of fancy Arsenal to control the game. I just want to get through that first half sort of relatively unscathed.
Do you feel at all? Do you see any of the parallels? It's funny because to me, the whole like dynamic has shifted. Just in the respect that now we're kind of like, yeah, it was only a few years ago, right, that we were Pochettino's young upstarts, and you had that sort of like the tail end of the Wenger era when you still had players like Giroud in there. And in many sort of metrics, like to look at everything like that, we were more exciting. We had these like young, promising players, and yeah, you know, we were generally doing better than you in the league. But still, when we'd come up against you, especially at the Emirates, you'd still just have that kind of that experience and that, I don't know, hardened edge to a derby where you generally tend to get the result or even get a draw at White Hart Lane as well. And I just wonder if right now, because I do think I hate saying it, and I'm getting all sorts of pelts from other Spurs fans for saying it all the time. I think you lot are brilliant. Like, I really do think you're really good, and I hate it. I hate how good you are. And my only hope for this game really is, yeah, okay, the crowd is going to play a massive part, but also just the fact that I just wonder if we might have that little bit more experience in some of those key players that might be able to just sort of still rattle your lads a bit. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Kane is super shrewd. Like, he just knows how to, the way he kind of uses his body to protect the ball, wins free kicks, the way he drops into space. I'd kind of be interested to see how Arsenal deal with that. How do you pass him on? How will they deal with his movement? Perisic is obviously a smart veteran. He'll be shrewd. He knows how to handle those games, handle that pressure. I think, like, Spurs are there to be got at. Like, obviously, I don't rate Spurs.
No one does. Don't even think Eric Dier rates himself, mate. But yeah,
I think they're to be there. Spurs are there to be got at. But I think a lot of these games. Look, without a question, I think Arsenal, man for man, I think Arsenal are a better team, but I think that in these games, they're often decided by who controls their emotions the best. And, you know, it's not like I'm saying anything, you know, that anyone hasn't thought before, but it's about controlling your emotions, about managing the game. And I think Spurs do have a few players that are capable of that, that can get at people, that can wind people up, but also manage the pressure. And I think that if Spurs manage that first half well, then they make the most of the crowd being up for it in the first half, then I think that gives Spurs the opportunity to win. But again, like, what Arsenal have done really well this season, Spurs is a different game, but what Arsenal have done really well in the games that I've watched so far this season is start fast and be, like, really at it, aggressive, pressing the ball, winning the ball back, getting into tackles, not letting the opposition breathe. And being ruthless. The Newcastle game was one of the few games this season where we were not ruthless in that first 15 minutes. We didn't take the lead. And I think that, again, and also, actually, I think the managers play an interesting role in this. And I don't mean just tactically. I mean about their managing of their emotions. Both of them, absolute, like, head loss merchants. And I think their ability, like, I actually felt in the Newcastle game, although I love Arteta's passion and that he cares and everything, I think his anxiety and frustration on the sidelines filtered through onto the pitch. And I think that he was being too frenetic, and I kind of felt like, I might be wrong, but I just felt like that passed on to the players. I wouldn't want him to do that at White Hart Lane. There's caring, but there's also, like, showing the team that, listen, we're in control here, just stay calm. But both Conte and Arteta are absolute maniacs. So how they respond to what's happening on the pitch, I think, could also be a factor.
Here's one then for you, mate, on Arteta. Be honest, did you always have faith in him? Did you think it would get to this point? Or, you know, when you went on that run of what? I think you went about, what, 6 or 7 games, losses in a row, was it, last season? Or season before? I think it was season before, wasn't it?
I can't exactly remember. I think yeah, that's correct. It was the season, not the last season, the season before.
Yeah. At that point, were you not thinking, he's in over his head here?
I think I can back myself and say, and I think when I've been on this podcast before, that I was saying I back Arteta. Actually, I can't. Now I'm worried that I'm going to become some sort of meme.
Mate, no one's going to listen back. it's only my mum that listens to this, you know.
So I think I've been pretty consistent in my support of him. But during that period, the one thing that worried me about him, and I think I can't remember specifically, like, whether I was like, he needs to go or not, amongst my other Arsenal mates, but I felt like his man management might have been an issue. But actually, really, it was man management of people that weren't the right characters. So it was pissing people off, and people weren't playing for him, but they weren't the right people to be at the club. So
Aubameyang, when, a big one, I guess.
Exactly. And when you look in the short term, you're like, he's not getting the best out of the team that we've got. And as fans, you can always, you know, you're guilty of that. You want results now, and you almost don't want to experience the pain of kind of a complete rebuild. But I think that his management of those characters is what has put us where we are today. But at the time, I remember thinking, he just needs to get the best out of him, and he wasn't. But, you know, they were creating an a toxic environment in the dressing room, and he's got rid of him, and rightly so.
I mean, because it's been some faith from the board, to be fair, to back him in the way that they have. He's obviously got that pedigree of having worked with Pep Guardiola. He is an Arsenal man. He played for the club and everything like that. But he was still really, relatively speaking, I mean, no, by any metric, he was an inexperienced manager. And he was coming to, loath as I am to say, one of the biggest clubs in the world, in Arsenal, in a job that is pretty high pressured, right? You know, after the sort of success he'd had with Wenger and the fallout of that, how toxic everything got, Emery being a bit of a false prophet, you sort of slipping further from relevance. I guess it was an ideal opportunity to take a punt on a young project manager, but equally, still, you don't get a lot of time at that kind of level of football. Arsenal's a club that demands to be at least in the Champions League, right? I'm pretty sure you've got stakeholders that will attest to that.
Yeah. I think that the reason they stuck with him is, and again, I'm just speculating here, but I think people like Edu would have been quite important in that because their understanding of the actual squad. And I think maybe it was, and I don't know how this was sort of articulated and how they went about this plan, but it really, in my mind, it didn't matter who was in there. That team would have, it wasn't right. And if they committed and believed in Arteta, which they must have done, and Edu communicating that to the relevant people on the board, that it doesn't, like, we need to give him time. We can change the manager. We can bring someone in on a huge contract. We can bring a big name in, but ultimately we need to rebuild. And I think Arteta's, you know, everyone talks about non-negotiables, and it got really slack within the club, and people, the big players on big money, weren't respecting what was demanded of the club. They just kind of did as they pleased, and that was a hangover a little bit of the Wenger period, the tail end of the Wenger era. And I think that Edu must have done a good job of communicating that to the higher ups, and sort of explaining that we need this amount of time to rebuild the squad. What I think Arteta has done brilliantly, and what the club has done brilliantly, is for once Arsenal have not done panic buys. They haven't bought a player with a broken back in January, and they haven't just spent in panic. They've had their targets. If they don't get the targets, and I think you can look at January last year when we needed a striker and we didn't get one, and we missed out. Ultimately, that was one of the main reasons we missed out on the Champions League, but it's because he couldn't get the player that he wanted, and we ended up getting Jesus, and look where we are now. And I think that's what they've done brilliantly is, and I've sort of waffled on a bit here, but ultimately what I'm trying to say is the project must have been really well communicated to the owners. They've stuck with them. They understood that it didn't matter who was in charge. This squad needed a complete rebuild, and they must have believed in his vision for what that rebuild looked like. And it was about effectively blowing up what we had, starting again, getting rid of mainly kind of, I want to say experience, but sort of aging players on big transfers that are big contracts, sorry, that had done it previously, but they'd come to Arsenal and, you know, they were just like early retirement, picking up their money, and they'd kind of, their best days were behind them. And now it's about young, hungry players, much like, as you were saying, when Pochettino came in at Spurs, it's the parallels really are there. And you can see that it's having faith in their projects. And I think the mistake that Spurs have made since Pochettino is what Arsenal haven't made, which is like, let's just go after a big name, pay them loads of money, and, you know, see what happens. And I don't know if, well, as you can see at Spurs, Spurs are so inconsistent. They're just like, one week you're like, Conte's lost the dressing room, all the, you know, he can't do anything for these players. These are the wrong players for him. He's angry. He wants the club to spend, etc., etc. And then the next week, like against Palace, they're just going battering 4-0. And Palace is a hard place to go. So I can't get a read on Spurs really.
Well, it felt like, to be honest, I don't really want to sort of diminish our achievement, but I'm going to do exactly that. The Palace game just felt a bit more like they were just 4-0 more crap than us, and we were 4-0 better than them. If that makes sense. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, we were awful in that first half, and it's true what you say, you know, we are massively inconsistent. I think the The thing, I kind of look over to Graham Potter struggling at Chelsea right now, and I sort of think, like, I just feel like everyone in this equation would be happier if Conte was at Chelsea again, back again there now, and Potter was at Tottenham, because it just feels like that's a more natural fit. I don't have any doubt at all that Conte walks into PSG, Real Madrid, somebody like that, and does a brilliant job with them. And he's done an all right job to a degree with, people talking about last year saying got us into Champions League and it was a miracle. I think those are his own words. And in my perspective, I'm like, yeah, okay, right. The team's not great, but at the same time, he's got like Harry Kane, like one of the best strikers ever. He's got Heung-min Son, who last year at least was one of the best players in the world. Like, you know, he won the fucking Golden Boot in the Premier League. He's got a decent team. He's got some decent players there. So I don't really buy this whole kind of the excuses they make for him that it's a miracle, that, you know, that he's got no agency in this situation at all, that the only people culpable for this are the board because they won't. You know, there's this whole sort of rhetoric of just back him, just give him whatever he wants. And it's like, but Chelsea did that. And yeah, okay, he won the league the first year with them, but then he did fuck all with them after that and ended up sacking him. Because he got in a mood. So, I don't know. The jury's out on that one. I'm always going to sort of favour, especially for Tottenham, having that journey. That's something to believe in. And I think the problem is, because we came so close and yet so far across the board in most competitions with Pochettino, I just think there's that hunger now. There's that real need to win something here. And that's why we keep kind of punting for these managers, the Mourinho, Conte, because I just don't think anybody's prepared. Harry Kane's a big part in this, right? People are terrified of him going, of him leaving and thinking, you know, he's not going to give us another 5-6 years. You know, all right, okay, we can bring in, let's say we brought in Graham Potter last year and he's saying to us, look, it's going to be three, four years at least until we're back in business again. And I just wonder if that appetite there. I know a lot of the fans don't feel that way. And this is one of those real sort of big divides at the moment, is melts like me that are all like, I don't really like Conte. And people are just like, you're the reason we never win anything, you fucking dry lunch. That's your
expression. I'm sure you've been riding Conte's dick at some time. I swear, there have been times where you've liked Conte. I'm not having that. You've completely written him off.
I've never really loved him, mate. Honestly, like, I think I quite enjoyed the theatre of basically beating you last year toward the end of the season and getting into the Champions League, but I think I was excited when we first signed him because it's after Nuno Espirito Santo. You know, we had that weird period, what is it, about a month and a half, 2 months of like this geezer who just clearly wasn't, you know, I talk about like the worry about hiring Arteta for Arsenal, like hiring Nuno Espirito Santo, it seems so weird. I mean, some of the managers, we're looking at Gattuso and stuff like that before him. And I think everyone was thinking like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, we just sat Pochettino, and all right, a lot of people didn't like him, but at least, you know, we had Jose Mourinho after that. And then we're now getting linked with Daniel Fonseca and fucking Gennaro Gattuso and things like that. Like, come on, man. So I think when Conte finally came along after all that, I was pretty pumped about it. But it's just felt from the off that it's a bit of a bad fit. But so I'm not just like ragging on my own team ahead of a North London derby. The one thing I will give him, and I think the one thing he does do very well for us, I think in games like this, as we've seen last year, he knows how to win these games, you know. And I think that's, again, that's something he does have going for him. I won't ever deny he's a great manager. He's clearly like good at what he does. My thing has always been about the fit, if it's the right fit for Tottenham. If we're talking about a fit, if we're going to go back to Arteta, like, what do you think, really, like, if you had to narrow it down to, like, a key point or, you know, a few key points, what's the sort of the main thing he's gotten right, do you think? Because it's funny, it's just like, because you were like, last year, you were on the cusp, and I remember saying to you, like, I think you're good, but there's still a bit of a, like, I still think there's a bit of a soft underbelly to Arsenal. I still think, like, you can be got at. And I don't feel that as much. I hate it. I don't feel that as much anymore. I feel like when I look at you from the outside, all of them are 100% bought into what he's doing. Someone, I look at someone like Xhaka, right? I look at Xhaka, who for the majority of his career, I've looked at Arsenal career at least, has been just some donkey, some like reckless, headstrong, just idiot that just cannot like keep his emotions in check, and that just completely kind of overtakes him. He's obviously a talented footballer, but he just has never been, he's just needed to grow up. And it just seems like this year now, he's just got his head switched on, and he's just like one of your generals, and he's completely bought into it. Like, what do you, because I mean, we've all seen All or Nothing, and that's entertainment as much as it is a documentary, right? I don't, you know, you can see the, and I've got to say, mate, he is a peculiar bloke, mate. You know, he is a peculiar.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Bloke.
He is. Some of those team talks were absolutely... They were straight red for me. That is a straight red. The light bulb thing, I'm not having that. I'm sorry, Mickey boy, but I'm not having you doing a light bulb. That is a straight red. I don't know how the players didn't laugh. I just can't get on board with that. But I think there's probably two or three things of him. First of all, and most imperatively, is I think he's just to have a clarity of project, like what he wants to do, how he wants the team to play, and the players that he needs to do it. And he's uncompromising. So that's not that he doesn't listen to other people's opinions. It's just that he has full confidence and conviction in what he wants to do. And I think that that clarity breeds confidence in the club as a whole. I think Arsenal have been really, really clever in the same way that England sort of repaired their relationship with the fans using like social media and those kind of mechanics. I think and the merch, like I know everyone jokes about the merch and it is funny, especially when we're crap. It's like, yeah, but at least we've got good merch. I do think that a lot of the messaging and heritage stuff around the kind of the endless kits and merch that we do bring out, I really do feel like that has helped bring the fans closer together to the team and all these little things.
So you're admitting that you are Club Shop FC, Ben?
I am 40 years old and I am genuinely, I've been more on that, like, I'm like, can I wear a full Arsenal tracksuit? I actually was looking at this, I was looking at something the other day and I turned to my girlfriend, I was like, do you think it's weird that if I bought this? And she's like, I don't know, like, you are a middle-aged man. I was like, yes, maybe that is a bit pathetic.
Are you like to have... turning around to your lads like, these are wavy garms, aren't they, lads?
I am like,
Dad,
fully...
what are you on about, mate? You're
like... I'm no longer am I raging at the fact that they just keep bringing out like a fucking Stella McCartney Lidl mashup for the Johnson Payne Trophy. I'm like, fucking, where do I sign? Okay. Yeah, I'll get that. And I'll get Smith Rotel on the back. Or just like Gunnosaurus 1. Is that weird? Yes, you look like a massive pedo. But I don't care because we're playing well.
Doing all your work emails with the Odegaard, do you know what I mean?
I am like fully, I have been completely brainwashed. But I do feel like all these little elements, and you can listen to Mikel Arteta's press conferences, and I think the players as well were 100% briefed, 100% briefed on like just keep mentioning the fans, their importance of it. I know that there is definitely some fun to be had with the Ashburton army. But that younger fan, I said for years, the reason it was so crap at the Emirates and the Highbury for so long was that the tickets were, A, they outpriced any young fans. So everyone who used to go Arsenal were either like people that have been going 30 years, the ticket's been in their family forever, they're old, they don't want to sing, they're not enthusiastic about it. And actually what happened was, during the pandemic, people took season ticket breaks, or like they gave, because we were crap as well, like people giving up their season tickets. That was an opportunity for young people to get tickets, and they did that and they took it. And now we've got like a much younger fan base, like really up for it. Now, look, I absolutely love it. I'm not going to like sit on here and pretend that I don't. Like, I've been over Arsenal the last two seasons quite a bit, and I've never known the atmosphere to be like that and the crowd to be up for it, and I absolutely love it. I'm not too sure that you need to wear a mask across your face if you're singing like if you're singing the William Saliba song. It's not like you're some hardcore firm that's about to have a right tear up. You're singing a tequila song about William Saliba. So I find like the whole kind of wearing a mask and like, we're a firm, we've got to cover up our face. You're not going to get arrested. You're not going to get arrested for singing this song. But other than that, like, I have absolutely no qualms with it. I absolutely love it. And I think all these things...
A lot of that's like young people getting excited, though, and it's seeing the ultras in Europe and all that type of stuff. Yeah, well, because I see with the Ashburton army, like, a lot of them, they're all wearing like all black and all that type of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, it feels less hooligan-y and more just that kind of like ultras sort of movement in a way.
Absolutely. And I think they have been like so central to like the shift in the club. So what I'm saying is, Arteta's messaging the whole time and his clarity of what he wants to do, what he wants to achieve, it's always really consistent. And I think that has filtered out to everyone. Obviously, okay, I say non-negotiables, we can take the piss out what we want, but actually being uncompromising about the standards that you expect everyone to meet has been really good. And I think that his understanding of a player's strengths actually have been really, really good. Our recruitment has been fantastic as well. But when I say an understanding of a player's strengths, it's like Ben White was signed as, everyone thought he was signed as, he was a centre-back. He played the first season as centre-back. Now he's shifted over to right-back. And he's been an absolute revelation there. Like Tomiyasu was brilliant, and to be keeping him out of the side is quite surprising given how good he was in his first year. And I think he's done that with a few other players. The best example being Xhaka. The whole time, the reason Xhaka hasn't been the player that we thought he could be is because playing him in the wrong position and asking him to do the wrong job, a job that he wasn't equipped for. He is a better going forward. His distribution, his vision is his strength. But we had him previously as a defensive midfielder. He's immobile and he's got and he's rash. So playing in those defensive positions, he's not, I don't think he's an amazing athlete either. So like he would just get turned over by midfields that would overrun him. And when he was trying to play on the turn, when we were trying to play out from the back, he needs space and time around him. So I think it's Arteta's, those are the things that he's done really well. But above everything, I reiterate, it's the clarity of what he wants to do. And I think that what you saw of Emery, whether it was like a language thing as well, like there just wasn't that clarity there. I don't think the team understood what they were being asked to do. And also, like from what I heard, like Emery loved overloading players with lots of information. And I think the players that were there didn't like that. So yeah, I'm really pleased with where we're at, but everyone is always, you included, always like, oh, look how good you are. And everyone's always trying to bait me into committing to we're going to win this, that and the other. We are not halfway yet. And the next few games, huge how the players handle those injuries, tiredness. Yeah, we'll see.
Do you think that we like provoked you a bit last season, like with the kind of the top four, the all of it? Do you know what I mean? The whole narrative that was built up leading up into that game.
It might have been a different story if we weren't playing Spurs. Like, if we weren't going head to head with Spurs for that full spot, it might have been different. But to be honest, like, do you know the game that like really pissed me off? Like, obviously the Spurs game was bad. I remember punching the table and swearing, and my girlfriend was in the garden, like, watering the plants with the kids, and I swore loudly. And she was like, oh, well done. That's good parenting.
It's like, nice to rub that in at that point. As well, isn't it? So my team's lost, and I'm a shit dad. Cheers. Thanks, love.
I was just, you know, it's just like, I don't know why he gets upset. And I was like, because it's Spurs, that's why. But the game that really pissed me off was the Newcastle game. And I now have an irrational hatred for Callum Wilson, who turned into fucking Ronaldo.
Oh, he was a titan that night. I was there like, away the lads, like pumping my fists at the TV. Blood money? Blood money? What blood money? Come on.
I was like, why do you not care so much? Why are you running? You've got nothing to play for. And Callum Wilson literally turned into R9. He's smashing everyone about. I was like, why are you doing this? You've got nothing to play for. Now I hate him and I hate Newcastle. Like, I was absolutely raging. That was far more annoying for me than the Spurs game, which was more of an emotional sort of burn. But the Newcastle one was just, that was a really annoying game for me.
It's, yeah, it does worry me though. There's just that bit of me, I'm like, did we like win the battle, but are we about to lose the war? Is it like, did we just create this monster now that suddenly after all our smug Arsenal get battered everywhere they go, finishing in the top four last year, that now we're looking down the fucking barrel of you winning the Premier League? And I'm just like, how is that fair? How does that happen? Why can't Chelsea just be good again for a bit? Like, we're not even getting to enjoy Liverpool's fall off. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would normally be getting that in my veins, but I'm like, oh, who's replaced Liverpool? Fucking Arsenal. Like,
no, the worst is Man United being good again. Like,
ah, bollocks. I don't trust them. I don't think there's anything
not.
In them.
No. I hope not. I really, really hope not. I would be absolutely gutted if they started to hit their best form. But I think, like, jokes aside, when I look at it, I almost feel like, I look at Arsenal and obviously their achievements in the last few years in no way can compare to Liverpool, but I see a resemblance in the way that, like, our sort of, you know, like, Liverpool hit these incredible levels and just still, I mean, obviously they did win, they have won trophies, but ultimately in the Premier League just like ran out of steam in the way that Man City were just relentless. And I look at the way sort of the intensity of Liverpool's football, like when they're at their best, and I look at what Arsenal are doing, and I was like, that intensity is like is one of the strengths of our game. But in the same way that I kind of look at the way Liverpool running out of steam, that is my worry of Arsenal, is that to beat Man City, you have to be perfect almost every week. And I know that we're ahead of them, but a few bad results for us and they're just so relentless, and it just turns like they don't have to be like, they are just perfect, if you see what I mean. Like, and I know they've had a few bad results, I get that, but they're so relentless and so boring. It's why I hate them as well. And they've just got their squad's just so ridiculous that they can afford to not, they're just going to see it through. Whereas Arsenal like have to be at their best every single week, and you've got to be intense and relentless every single week, because if you're not, they will capitalise on any mistake that you make. And
I mean, the mad thing is the Premier League's come to that bizarre point now where it's like, if you lose more than, let's say, three games, you're like, well, I'm probably not going to win the league this year.
Exactly.
You know, it's madness, you know? And that's what City have done, and that's what the money's done. And it's going to be Newcastle soon as well. Like, and I was talking to Hainsey about this before. Like, got to drastically sort of tear up this Newcastle timeline, because people were saying, yeah, it'll still take them 10, 15 years. I don't think it will, man. I think they're going to be there sooner rather than later. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've seen.
I mean, they could. They're the League Cup semi-final now. So, like, often, you know, an FA Cup or a League Cup is like the jump-off point for like a team. You know, it was for Man City. Going on like a real sort of trophy winning period, and that's what could be happening at Newcastle.
Could, because this is one of those things that, and I've said this before, like, yeah, right, you've spent money, and I think all money in football, there's no clean billionaires. We all know this. Like, the whole sport is rancid now. But there are levels to it, right? And we talk about all the off-pitch stuff with Newcastle, City, sports washing and all that sort of thing. And people will sort of say to me, like, neutrals will be like, yeah, but there's got to at least be that little bit of you that thinks, like, you know, if Arsenal do it, like, kind of fair enough, they're sticking two fingers up. I'm like, no, the fucking isn't. And I get it. I know it's such a conflicting feeling. Like, there's that bit of me that's like, yeah, I suppose in a way, I've seen even Spurs fans try to twist it to be like, well, it should give you hope that it's possible, you know, that if you just, you get the right manager and you back him. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to have hope from Arsenal winning the fucking league. I've seen that enough times in my life. And I've suffered through secondary school being a fucking Spurs fan when Arsenal were winning the double, winning the fucking league at White Hart Lane. As if you're going to get shit to the point where you're shitter than Tottenham and then come back and win the league again before we even do it. It just can't happen.
If you said to me, Spurs can win the league and, like, break the monopoly and give us all hope, or Man City, Newcastle, the nation's fucking states, they win the Premier League for the rest of the fucking existence.
For eternity.
I'll fucking bang. I'm taking side here. I'm sign me up. I don't give a shit. I do not want Spurs to ever win anything. So
you'll be sat there in your living room with the problematic tea towel on your head, won't you? Those Newcastle fans.
I'll literally immigrate. I'll be all over it. I'll be getting the Newcastle Saudi kit. I would. There is nothing worse than Tottenham fans celebrating.
Get to do it. Like, come
no,
on.
No, but even if you celebrate a goal, even if the camera pans to Spurs fans celebrating, I don't know any of those people in the crowd, but I instantly hate them. Like, some of those people might be nice.
Spitting
people,
at the TV.
Well, like, I look at him and I'm like, I bet he's a prick. I bet it's not. I'd meet him in the street. I'm sure he's a nice fella. But I just, watching them celebrate, knowing how much they hate Arsenal as well. It's watching the opposition fans celebrate a goal in an awful London derby is torture.
I do like it how every now and again, it's obviously when I've been on one on Twitter saying stuff about Arsenal, every now and again, just getting that WhatsApp from you being like, if I didn't know you, honestly, I would hate you so much. And I do know you, and I hate you a bit. Like,
when I see Arsenal fans responding, I'm like, do not give it to him. Why are you responding? You fucking idiot. This is what he wants. I know he's a prick. I feel the same, but just don't respond. It's like, you might as well just, it's just like unbelievable baiting, and they always bite. And I am biting at home, but I'm like, I'm not replying to that tweet. Like, I love it. Like, in a way, I love it that it's like that risk reward thing, right? It's like, that's how the North London Derby's got is, it is, it's so awful when you lose, but because we're so close and closely matched, it's so sweet when you win. And that just about makes it worth it for those times that you do win. But it is absolutely brutal when you lose, and when you lose a game that really matters.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. Like, at the moment, we're staring, there's that, like, dilemma at Spurs. We're staring down the barrel now of losing to you at White Hart Lane and getting 6 points off of City, as we always do, somehow. I don't know how we're, like, the one team that manages to always turn over City. We can't fucking beat West Brom. Like, do you know what I mean? We always fucking lose to them when we need to beat them. But for some reason, we can beat Manchester City.
Okay, and I've got a question for you. You can. Harry Kane leaves Spurs on a free and signs for Arsenal. But, Arsenal do not win the Premier League, like, next season. So, like, when's Kane's contract run out?
He's got a year and a half left, 18 months.
Okay. Harry Kane signs for Arsenal on a free, but Arsenal finish outside the European places, have, like, a disastrous season, and Spurs win the league. But we do have Kane. Would you take it?
So, after that point, after next year, so basically you're saying this summer, Harry Kane goes to Arsenal, but yeah, we win the league next year.
Yes.
But then after that point, you can still win it.
Yeah, anything can happen after that. But you do win the Premier League and we have a disastrous season.
What is this hellish scenario you've created? Like, this is like me saying, would you take Arsenal Football Club folding, but...
And Kane, he also scores in the North London Derby in that season, pulls up his T-shirt and says, once a red, always a red.
And there's a photo of that, you know, when he's the chubby kid.
And he does it in front of the Spurs fans. But, Spurs win the league. Would you take it?
I mean, this is just grotesque, isn't it? Like... yeah, Spurs win the league, I guess I'd have to, mate.
Oh God,
I guess I'd have to see Tottenham win the league. Yeah, when it's put to me like that, you know, why am I gracing this with proper conversation?
But the flip side is, would I take Spurs winning the league for Harry Kane to celebrate in front of the Spurs fans at White Hart Lane? Once a gooner, always a gooner. Big fat Harry Kane on his T-shirt. The little... And then after that, we could win it. Do you know what? I think I'd be tempted to take it because I think that after that, we're going to absolutely run riot with Kane up front. Just that one season of hell for complete dominance. Right.
I've got one for you then. I've got one for you because I put this to Spurs fans the other way. Here we go. Would you rather, right... Arsenal win the Premier League this year, but then, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks later, Tottenham win the Champions League. So, Arsenal win the Premier League, but this season, Arsenal win the Premier League, but Tottenham win the Champions League. Or, Arsenal finish fourth and Tottenham finish fifth. And don't win anything.
And there's no rules after that, right? No rules after this season.
Just this season.
Yeah. Oh my God. See, the thing is, I'll take it, right? And
which one? The fourth
I'd Arsenal win the Premier League. Because the reason I take it is I'm more want Arsenal. Let's fuck it. Do you know what? I don't know. It's a question of do I want Arsenal to do well more than I want Spurs to fail? And I think yes. So yeah, I'm more concerned of Arsenal doing well and not...
Even when it's next year, you come into the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, as it's now known, and hearing Champions of Europe, you'll never sing that, ringing around, smug. You know those smug Tottenham fans that you talk about seeing on the telly? All these big red faces... Just singing, and you sat there like, well, we won the league, and us just drowning it out.
Oh, fuck, you know what? That is a tough...
The bus coming down the Seven Sisters, down the top of my road, Harry Kane and Hugo Lloris with old big ears on top of that, white confetti everywhere.
Oh, that is bad. That is bad.
Just think about it. Think the whole narrative is like, yeah, well done, Arsenal, you won the league. No one cares about that. Tottenham just won the Champions League, you know? Come on, mate. Because this is completely what I'm just begging that we can just do some sort of miracle in the Champions League this year. That's what I've thrown everything into this year, completely. Because obviously me doing that is the important factor.
It was the bus parade that might be the tipping point for me. I could kind of handle the other stuff, but it was the streets of North London lined with loads of scum fucking cheering old big ears and, oh, that's brutal. I couldn't, imagine the news that day. I'd smash my telly up or something. I couldn't.
Honestly, when we lost it to Liverpool, news, newspapers, all of it, I didn't look at any, I literally stopped myself looking at any. I could not see them lifting the trophy. I couldn't do it. And obviously, I saw it just secondhand when the Champions League all started up next year and the highlights begin, and you see fucking Henderson doing his like little joggy feet thing that he does, and I just wanted to smash my TV out. Do you know what I mean? But couldn't do it. Tottenham winning the Champions League. I'm going to take that, mate.
Yeah, I don't know if I've changed my mind now. I'm going to have to go and contemplate that, but that is a big question.
Let's right, mate. We'll get to the end now. I just want to talk about the game itself, right? The actual meat and bones of this horrible, stinking, putrid fixture that is on the horizon on on Sunday afternoon. Obviously, Gabriel Jesus is still out. Who's going to play? How do you expect you're going to come at us, right? Surely, still.
I 100% think that's what Arteta will do. I think that he will play Tierney. I think he'll play Tierney instead of Zinchenko, even though I think he'll want to be on the front foot, and Zinchenko will, the way he kind of tucks in to midfield and creates overloads there, like that is I do think we want to dominate, but I still think Arteta would be too worried about the gaps that Zinchenko leaves in behind. So I think that he's going to pick Tierney. I think obviously Nketiah, I've been saying a week, like I really think Nketiah's done, like the goals, you know, forget like Oxford and whatever, the goals against West Ham and Brighton, like really important and really for his confidence. I think that physically and tactically and and his belief in himself has come on leaps and bounds, and I do actually think he, although he's like more of a penalty box sort of finisher than Jesus, I do think that he's becoming more and more similar to him in terms of his pressing and stuff like that. So, but I think that this is the game where if Nketiah does something like in this game, then you kind of feel like, not that he's arrived, but more that he's established himself as a real kind of Premier League striker. So be interesting to see what he's able to produce in a game like that with pressure. I do think Arteta will want to get at Spurs. I think he'll want to silence the crowd. He'll want to get on top and keep the crowd quiet, because everyone knows that if it's rocking and a few shit decisions from our players who can't, are letting the emotion from the stands affect them, he's not going to want that. You don't want to give away any silly bookings in the first 20 minutes, because then you're kind of walking a tightrope. So, yeah, I think we're going to go at Spurs. And I've literally talked myself into believing that I think we're going to do quite well now. Whereas when I first started this call, I wasn't so sure.
Interesting.
I think it will be... I don't know, fuck it. I want to hear what you say first. I can't. I'm unsure.
Well, I worry about our defence as ever. I worry about the kind of you playing around us, and we've just got to hope that the crowd plays its part and your players bottle it again, because that's got to be... we won't be able to keep up with your football. The way you've been playing sort of lately was good. Newcastle were very good against you the other night, and I think they showed that if you play at Arsenal a bit, they can be got at, but we ain't going to do that to you, you know?
No, but I think what the Newcastle game was, that I think a great example of what I was sort of saying earlier, which was that you have to be perfect every game, and in those first 15-20 minutes, Arsenal got in good positions but did not make the right decision on the ball. And in the North London derby, you have to make the right decisions. You have to be perfect. You have to take your chance, because you might not get another one at White Hart Lane. So I think Newcastle did do well, but I think Arsenal just didn't make the most of their pressure. And I think also nodding towards the sort of taking reference in the Newcastle game, is the referee would be absolutely huge on Sunday, because that Newcastle game was a mess because the referee made so many silly bookings at the beginning at the start of the game for both sides, that like players it was just nonsense. And then he'd sort of set a precedent, and he was booking players for challenges that did not warrant yellow cards, and then couldn't book players after that because they would have been sent off. So I think the referee plays a really, really important part. He's got a sort of not let the game get out of control, but at the same time he's got to let it flow. He can't be booking people too early for you know, stuff that doesn't warrant it, because it's a North London derby. There are going to be tackles flying, and they're going to, people are going to be sort of pushing him, pushing the boundaries. It's how the ref handles that.
I think, you know, the big thing, like you're talking about, that being clinical, being, you know, you're having to take your opportunities when they come. The biggest one for me, I just think still the biggest difference between the side is Harry Kane, you know? And I think we absolutely need to just, like, I think for as much smoke as I'm blowing up your asses at the moment, I think Saka's well on his way. I think Odegaard's a brilliant player. I don't quite think you have anybody quite on that level. And very few teams do, that's the thing. But I don't think you quite have anybody on that level as Harry Kane. And we've seen him make the difference so many times in these sort of games. So if we can get the ball to him, we can get him proper service, then that would be great. But I mean, the big thing that you may not know is that we've got both Kulusevski and Bentancur both injured. I mean, Richarlison's fucked seemingly. So Kulusevski and Bentancur, who have still seemingly been 50-50 all this week, haven't actually trained yet, people seem to be saying. So being involved in the first team training, so whether or not they play is a huge part in whether or not we'll be at all successful. But yeah. Cheers for coming on, Ben, and I won't be speaking to you probably for a couple of weeks now after this point.
I basically, just so you know, do not fucking message me if you win. Don't message me.
I don't do that anyway. I don't do any of that. None of that.
Our friend Tom Kingham, if he's listening, he definitely will message me. Yeah, let's just give each other space depending on the result after this game. And I appreciate the opportunity to come on. And I'm sure there's loads of Spurs fans out there saying, what's this prick talking about? Well, I'm at Ben Welch 82. Come and find me. Come and give it to me on there. I won't reply because I always take too long to curate my tweets.
You're bigger than all that, aren't you?
No, I want to tweet, but then I spend so long thinking about it that the moment's gone. And then when I do tweet, and I'm really proud of it, it's like talking to an empty room and no one engages with it. So,
hey guys, we've landed on the moon. Cheers, Ben.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.